have more regulatory clout when it comes to overseeing the environment and natural resources. Sean Johnson has more.
Speaking at an event attended by other GOP presidential hopefuls, Walker said every state has an equivalent of the EPA.
They're much more effective, much more efficient, and certainly much more accountable at the state and the local level than they are in Washington. Why not take major portions of the funding and responsibilities of the federal government in that regard and natural resource protection and send it back to the states?
Wisconsin League of Conservation Voters Director Carrie Schumann says the trouble with Walker's idea is that pollution doesn't respect state lines.
The air blows across state lines, water flows across state lines, and the precedent that would set and what that would do across the country could be devastating.
Walker has recently been sharply critical of the EPA's proposed carbon emission rules, saying they'd lead to job loss in Wisconsin. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Just about 11 minutes after 8 o'clock, just ahead of the morning show with Greg Berg. Excuse me, let's check WGTD Sports and Weather. Kenosha Kingfish beat Kalamazoo 6-0 yesterday. The Kingfish take on the Battle Creek Bombers in Michigan tonight. Major League Baseball, Brewers lose to the Cardinals, Cubs lose to Miami, White Sox lose to Texas. This afternoon, the Brewers play the Cardinals again. Tonight, the Cubs meet Miami again, and the White Sox play Texas again. And the Stanley Cup Finals begin tonight. The Blackhawks play in Tampa Bay. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service for this Wednesday, June 3rd. Partly sunny for the morning, sunny for the afternoon. High today, 76 inland, 65 near Lake Michigan. Right now, 61 degrees, Kenosha and Racine, 53 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 12 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg up next.
Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. WGTD is also supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to begin today's program by welcoming into our studios Courtney Grieve, who is an instructor in the horticulture department here at Gateway Technical College. So she would be a colleague of Kate Jerome, who, of course, joined us just last week to answer some questions about lawn and garden care. And Courtney Grieve is here to talk in a little more detail about a big event which is coming up. It's one of the most exciting events of the whole year for the horticulture staff and students here at Gateway, namely their annual plant sale. And we'll talk about a couple of other special things that are going to be going on this weekend as well. Courtney Grieve, we welcome you to the morning show.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. Good to welcome you here for the first time. So you started here at Gateway a couple of years ago. Let's just find out a little bit about what got you interested in getting your fingers so dirty in the garden and the yard. Is this kind of a lifelong interest of yours?
In a way, yeah, it has been. Always as a child, kind of playing around in the garden. But then actually, as my family, we moved here to Wisconsin, I would have been about 11 years old, so a long time ago. And as I got older, around the age 14, 15, I actually got a job at Blodgett Garden Center in Fort Atkinson. And I worked in the garden center all through my time in high school, did all of my classes in the ag department at Fort Atkinson High School. And actually, after that, I didn't go to college right away. I joined the service, and I was in the military for a while. And then once I came back from my first deployment overseas, I ended up going to school at UW-Madison. And so horticulture has always been something that I kind of came back to as a way of, you know, kind of reconnecting in a way.
I'm just, it's occurring to me that when somebody joins the military, you give up a lot. And I'm guessing one of the things you pretty much give up completely is gardening. I mean, that opportunity just typically isn't there at all.
Not at all. Well, the funny thing is, actually, when I was deployed in Iraq, that's one of the things that I would turn back to, is I had a little mini garden and kind of like a built-in planter that I played with. My mom sent me some seeds and had, you know, little mini sunflowers. But then I also learned some of the plants that they had over there. And that was the first time I was ever exposed to bougainvillea, which is one that we can't grow here due to our winters, but we keep some in our greenhouse. So it was kind of neat that I had this exposure to plants of another origin.
Huh. So tell me about that interesting plant, bougainvillea.
Well, bougainvillea actually, over there in Iraq, it grows as kind of like a big hedge. They use it as a hedge or a screen cover on fences. And it looks like it has this big, beautiful flower, but in reality, it doesn't. The flower, what you think it looks like, is what's called a bract. So it's a modified leaf that has color to it. And So from a distance, it looks like, oh, it's this big, beautiful kind of magenta, bright, vibrant pink flower. But the flower itself is really tiny, and it's right at the center of those bracts.
Ah.
And so it was just really interesting. It was something that caught my eye immediately. And then, you know, coming back to the States, I was like, I need to find out what this is. I mean, that was back before, you know, we used the internet for all of our research.
Right,
so,
right.
It was just one that always stuck with me.
Very good. So when you finally are closing that chapter, did you go to college then to study horticulture?
I did. I went to college at UW-Madison and did my bachelor's degree in horticulture. Actually, that had an emphasis on international ag. And then I worked towards still completing a master's degree in organic and sustainable vegetable production, where I focus on what we're considering the best management practices for organic snap bean production.
Ah.
Yeah, so kind of something interesting, both sides of the world, ornamental and edible.
Very good. And I can see how you would be a very good match then for Gateway, because you're talking about some principles that are very important to the horticulture department here.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a really good tie. Great place to be.
Very good. So, for instance, in this semester that just completed, what were your own responsibilities? What have you been teaching here at Gateway?
A lot of different classes. I had no idea when I came in I would have such a wide variety. This spring, I actually taught of course, it's called Horticulture Business Operations. So the opportunity to get students kind of understanding what it would be required of you as a business operator, managing personnel, estimating, bidding, even basics such as brushing up their resume. How do you format it? So that was one class. Another one was Advanced Landscape Design, where I also teach Intro to Landscape Design, which will be running this fall. But Advanced Landscape Design, the students have the opportunity to use a computer drafting system, which is Dynascape. And so the students spend primarily a lot of their time honing in their skills of landscape design and learning some new things, but using the computers to be able to draft and not hand draw.
Mm.
And I also taught a vegetable science class, which was really fun. We formatted it in a way where we actually started after spring break, so knowing that our seasons limit what we can do, and the students have the opportunity to learn everything about seed scheduling, seed planting, germination, transplanting, all of that, with the constraints of our environment here and how we can kind of modify those things.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ahead of us talking about the plant sale, and that's your primary reason for being here, the Gateway's annual plant sale, which is coming up this Saturday, the 6th of June. Maybe you could just say a word about what Gateway has beyond the classroom to offer its horticulture students. I mean, what do you have growing where?
Well, and actually that's a feature of the plant sale this year, is not just to highlight our greenhouses where we have the plant sale, where everything is purchased, but we're going to have tours at 11 a.m. and 1 p.m., one guided by myself and one will be guided by Kate Jerome, to be determined who does which one still, where we can take the public who have never seen anything beyond our greenhouses and take them into our urban farm that we have for our students and into our learning gardens. We actually have a set of learning gardens on the other side of the academic building where we feature 7 different garden types that most people have no idea are even there. So we would like to be able to take that time to show that to the public so they can see how our students have these wonderful hands-on opportunities.
Are both of the things you talked about essentially on the Kenosha Gateway campus?
Correct. Both right here on the Kenosha campus, just a very short walk that would be guided by myself or Kate.
Very good. Yeah. Well, that sounds like a lovely opportunity that people should avail themselves of if they're at all curious. And then what about the greenhouse? I've actually never set foot in the greenhouses here at Gateway, just seen them from a distance. Just how much are we talking about? Just how big are the greenhouses?
Well, we do have three greenhouses overall. Two of them that are, we say, a little bit smaller, but in the long run, I don't have the exact dimensions on me. I would say 60 feet, 70 feet by 30 feet in size, where they actually house many different types of plants. One is actually focused on all of our foliage plants, so we have an abundance of house plants. So if you're in need of house plants, we have them for you. Then we also have another one that is focused on a lot of our annuals, small annuals that grow in high sun. Hopefully we'll have plenty of sun this summer, and warmer temperatures. Then we have another very large greenhouse that is kind of separated. It's not attached directly to the Pike Creek Horticulture Center, but that's our primary greenhouse that's been there the longest, I believe. And there we have an abundance of succulents that are available for people, along with annuals, small potted containers, and other items that they can see. So a lot of color, vibrancy, and then also as a feature in all of our greenhouses right now, well, two of the three, we actually have what we call alternative grow systems. So some hydroponic systems, if people are interested in starting a small hydroponic system at their home, we have some demonstrations of those available for people to see during the plant sale.
Cool. The plants themselves that are on sale, are they grown for that purpose? I mean, I think sometimes places that have sales like this, it's to get rid of the things they don't need, or that they get more than they want or whatever. But I suspect that this plant sale happens very much by design, and that much of what's being grown is grown exactly for the purpose of being sold. Is that right?
Well, it's grown for the purpose of being sold. You're correct in that, but it's also an opportunity for the students to learn. So the plants are actually started either by seed or bought in as plugs for a greenhouse crops class that runs in the spring. And they're in charge of making sure that things get started on time and maintained well, and that they look really good for the sale. And then, yeah, all of the plants are really grown for the purpose of the plant sale, but that's actually to help our students for our horticulture club that we have, Alpha Beta Hortus Horticulture Club, and it helps to generate funds for them to be able to go on great field trips, attend any local botanic gardens. They also participate in a national convention each year where they compete against four-year colleges in terms of, you know, plant identification, management of a landscape, installing landscapes. So really great hands-on opportunities for the students.
Wow. So for the typical plant that is on sale on Saturday, how early have some of those been started? I mean, how long have they been growing in the greenhouses?
Some of them were started from seed back in February.
Wow.
Yeah, which is pretty neat to be able to see. And most people wouldn't know that. They don't know how much time and goes into making sure that they look great for that one weekend out of the year.
So that's why timing is so important, I suppose. If you want everything to be, in a sense, ready for sale at this point in time, then they don't all get started at the same time.
Correct. You have to really know your plant knowledge and understand production principles that go along with timing, temperatures that are needed, how temperatures can actually manipulate growth so it can speed it up or slow it down, and light exposure. So we've had some challenges this spring with the temperatures kind of fluctuating from really warm days to cooler days, but we've done really well so far, and I think the students should be proud of what they've done.
So just give us a sense of the breadth of what is on sale on Saturday, and it's both flowers and vegetables and so on, right?
Correct. We have annuals. We have a variety of annuals, anything from small six-packs that are available up to a 4-inch pot. We also have the brand name Proven Winners, so a lot of really good annuals that are available for people. Then we have perennials that are going to be available, some that are what we would consider to be well-known in the landscape, so heuchera's, Helleborus, I believe we have some Campanulas and things like that, some foxglove. So really nice perennials for people. Then we have, like I said before, I mentioned houseplants, anything from your standard Tradescantia prayer plant, or we have unique things such as palms and small bananas. Mm. So kind of an array of what people can see. Along with the annuals that I mentioned before, we also have some hanging baskets that are look really great right now, full of blossoms, ready to go for people. Mm. Then we also have a lot of our vegetables that are available. So highlighting tomatoes and peppers, still have some cold crops, things like in the brassica family. But those are, you know, really should have been in the ground by now. Things like that are still available for people. Swiss chard, we have some of that. And our tomatoes are beautiful heirloom varieties and some regular ones. But we really like to highlight the heirlooms. Then on top of that, we also are partnering with Wild Ones, which is a native plant natural landscape society, and they are bringing their plants in. They'll be set up as well, separate cash registers, but they will be using our site, which is unique for them because normally they're out west of the eye and it's difficult for people to be able to come and find them. So we're hoping that this is a really good partnership going into the future.
Excellent. That is so exciting. Now, typically Gateway is at Harbor Market on Saturdays. Will Gateway still be at Harbor Market on Saturday?
Yes, we're actually doing kind of a double duty on Saturday. We will have our plant sale here on the Gateway campus, but then we will still have our produce and our wonderful people out at the Harbor Market on Saturday.
Wow. We do want to make quick mention, by the way, that the Four Seasons Garden Club is also at Harbor Market this Saturday from 9 until 2. So it's a big day for people who want to find wonderful things for the lawn or the garden. And we should also mention that Gateway also always has some kind of a sale going on every Friday. Remind us of what that is.
Correct. So not only are we at Harbor Market on Saturdays, but we also feature an on-campus farmers market where that's actually set up in the Pike Creek Horticulture Center. So if you see the two big double doors open, we're open and ready for sale. That happens on Fridays, every Friday for the summer, from 11 to 2, and that's student ran, and they also harvest everything right away that morning.
Terrific. And remind us then about the time and exact location for what's going on Saturday with the on-campus plant sale.
Sure. Our campus plant sale is happening this Saturday at the Pike Creek Horticulture Center, and we will be located in the main greenhouse for purchase of all of our plants, and that's going to be happening from 9 to 2 this Saturday.
Very good. Courtney Grieve is an instructor in the horticulture department here at Gateway Technical College, the new person on the block, and you've obviously already made yourself very much at home and are an important part of what's going on. My thanks to you for joining me today on The Morning Show. It's great to meet you, and we look forward to having you on the program again.
Great. Thanks, Greg.
And the time is 8:28. You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio, and here is part two.
I wonder how many of you have heard of the intriguing notion of the six-word memoir, the notion of perhaps trying to summarize who you are or what your life has been in six words, no less than six words, no more than six words. This is actually something which has taken the world by storm, if you know about it, that is. And there's all kinds of people talking about this, deeply intrigued by the notion. Sermons have been preached about it, and whole books have been created around this intriguing concept. And the concept stems from SmithMag.net, Smith Magazine, which in and of itself is a wonderful place to visit on the World Wide Web to enjoy the magic of words and storytelling. And as far as I know, they have really hatched this notion and certainly nurtured the notion of the six-word memoir, gathering them not only from gifted, experienced writers, but from ordinary people. And these six-word memoirs can be read by the thousands, maybe the millions on this website, and in a series of books. The first one to be published was Not Quite What I Was Planning, a collection of these six-word memoirs. And several such books have been published, the most recent called It All Changed in an Instant, More Six-Word Memoirs by Writers Famous and Obscure. It's a paperback from Harper Perennial. And I'm delighted to be talking for the next few minutes on The Morning Show with Rachel Fershlizer, who is one of the editors of this book. Rachel Fershlizer, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Looking forward to this. First of all, maybe you can do a better job than I did of characterizing what Smith Magazine is all about and what we find on your website besides these intriguing six-word memoirs, which we'll, of course, spend most of our time talking about.
Sure. Well, Smith Magazine is online at smithmag.net, and it's really all about personal storytelling. So it's not just in six words, but it's about all the different ways you can tell your own nonfiction stories. And our tagline is everyone has a story. So you don't need to be the president. You don't need to be some great historical figure to have an autobiography worth sharing with the world. And technology has made it so easy these days to express yourself. Not only can you write a six-word memoir in about 6 seconds and press publish and be online, but you can use YouTube. You can shoot a video of yourself easily and for free. You can make an audio recording of yourself easily and for free. So there's been a real democratization of media in the last few years, and we're just taking advantage of it to let everyone tell their stories.
I have to confess that this morning is the first time I actually managed to sit down and visit your website, and I really did enjoy everything that I saw there. I saw one thing in particular that was so intriguing. At the bottom of the page devoted to six-word memoirs from teens is something that's not at all limited to six words, but a very interesting sort of autobiographical story, I suppose, or self-description. And there's something about the format in which we begin with words starting with the letter A and then gradually to the letter B, and we kind of make our way through the alphabet. And I've never seen anything quite like that before. And it's just one more intriguing way that someone might choose to talk about oneself and share some ideas with the world.
Yeah, the teenagers has been incredible. You know, we originally started out doing this for adults. And when we made a separate website for the teens, it just exploded. They're more used to living their lives online than the adults. They've grown up with the internet. They're not shy. They're not afraid. And so where adults might submit two or three six-word memoirs, the teenagers will come home from school every day and submit 10 or 20 just about that immediate moment. And then they comment a lot more than the adults. They'll favorite each other's, and they've formed this real community. So we have this word cloud on the teen site, which is, I think, what you're talking about. And the words get bigger as they get used more by teens. So, unsurprisingly, some of the big words are friends, divorce, breakup, school. You know, and so you can start to get a real sense of the ideas that are running through their minds all the time.
Oh, fascinating. I see that now, and that is so intriguing. How did your affiliation with Smith Magazine begin? I mean, what was your own road? And you don't need to limit yourself to six words.
Well, Larry Smith founded Smith Magazine in 2006, based around the idea of the story of the individual, the little guy. And I knew Larry a little bit because I was working in book publishing and he was reviewing books, and we were both kind of wordy, nerdy people. And when he started this website, I was starting to do more professional writing, and I was interested in what he was doing. And so I ended up running the memoir section, the book section, because books are really what I know. And then along the way of thinking of content for the memoir section of the site, we had this idea to take the Hemingway six-word story and give it a personal twist, because everything we do on the site is not just storytelling like fiction or poetry, but it's really about the individual's true life story. And we got really obsessed, and it's really blown up.
One of the things I would love to explore with you is this notion of six words and the way in which this works so extraordinarily well. And I suspect that this has all taken off much more spectacularly than any of you would have ever envisioned. First of all, let's talk about kind of the kernel of the idea itself. Take us back to when this idea about 3 years ago was initially launched.
Sure. Well, a lot of people know the idea of Ernest Hemingway's six-word story. It's probably apocryphal. It's a legend that he was challenged in a bar bet to write a novel in just six words. And he wrote, "For sale, baby shoes never worn." And whether it's true or not, a lot of people in the writing world sort of refer to it, but not a lot had been done with it recently. And because we love individual storytelling, we started asking some of our famous professional writers to do it. That's how it happened originally. We asked published memoirists for six-word versions of their story. But what we discovered is those weren't the people who needed it, because people who write whole books are daunted by telling their stories. But there are millions of people out there with stories to tell who say, "Oh, I'm not a writer. I don't know how. I'm too busy. I've got kids to raise. I'm a nurse. I'm an accountant. What do you want from me?" But once they started trying within these very simple restraints, then you could tell a whole story where you might be afraid to take a blank page, or who has the time or the desire to take a blank page and write a 300-page book. Some of us do, but some of us don't. But when I give you six little blanks and I say, "Come on, 5 seconds," suddenly we were getting, you know, "Becoming a Rock Star to Forget Her," "Met Wife at Her Bachelorette Party," and it was can't Look at Heart Donor's Picture. People were telling us these really powerful things that they might not find the words to tell us if they had to craft a whole book. But by adding more constraints, we actually found that people felt freed up to tell stories.
Isn't that intriguing, that constraints can be freeing? I think in some ways, I'm reminded of when my wife and I got engaged, and for a number of reasons, we decided to get married just a few months later. I mean, we were engaged in April, we were married in September, and that constrained us. It made so many things easier because you didn't have an unlimited array of reception halls to choose from or photographers to choose from. It sort of gave you a focus to your efforts. And in a sense, these constraints you're talking about here, for someone who would stare at a blank paper and not know where to start, this in a sense gives you a place to start.
Right. And for some people, it is just a place to start. Some people write their six-word memoir and they say, "Wow, that felt really good. I wanna tell more about my life." And they'll take their six-word memoir and they'll write a whole essay or even a whole book. We've had people write entire books that were started by a kernel of a six-word memoir. And for some people, six words is enough. It's just a moment of self-expression. You can do it on the toilet or on the subway or on a lunch break at work. So I think we're really trying to propagate the idea that you don't need to have 20 pages in The New Yorker to be a storyteller. You don't need to have a book deal with a major publisher to be a storyteller. Every single person is a storyteller, and you have something to say that people are going to want to hear. Hmm.
One thing that is intriguing is that some of these six-word memoirs really do seem to be memoirs that summarize a given person's life, or maybe the kernel of what has characterized their life and their life experience. And others are not really memoirs in quite the same way, are maybe six words that point to something very, very specific and isolated within one's life, or maybe six words that maybe point to a philosophy about how they live their life or whatever. Are you kind of intrigued by that or surprised by that as well, that not all of these memoirs are exactly memoirs in the way we think of that word?
Yeah, you know, some are really narrative and all-encompassing. You know, the famous memoirist Frank McCourt said, "The miserable childhood leads to royalties." Hmm. So you get the arc of his life there, from growing up poor in Ireland to becoming a best-selling writer. For other people, you'll get tiny little moments. My favorite ones are the ones that give you a tiny little moment that you can then extrapolate to a person's whole life. Alicia McKinney tells us, "Fourth choice to prom, still overcompensating." Larry makes fun of me because my favorite ones are always the ones from sort of nerdy young women growing up. I wonder why. but you take something like "Fourth choice to prom, still overcompensating," and you're taking one moment from her life, you know, maybe 30 years ago, and And then you're looking at how that might affect or explain the everyday life of a person in the world.
One of my favorites from the book, It All Changed in an Instant, that is so chilling, is from someone named Anne, who writes these six words: "I found my mother's suicide note." And on that page above it appears to be a photograph of that suicide note.
It is. Which it's is a scan of the actual note.
Which is also six words. No funeral, no wake, no nothing.
Yeah, it was incredible. We met Anne through the project, and we got that memoir, of course, and went, wow. And it's absolutely true. And her brother found the note for her to send it to us to put in the book. And she's done a couple of live events with us. And I think that it's a really interesting way to deal with things in your past, to turn them into stories and tell them to the world and kind of face them head on. And then, you know, some things are that powerful. And then we have, you know, "And She Lived Happily Ever After," Poppy Montgomery. Hmm. Or we have funny ones, "Love at First Sight," "Needed Glasses."
Yeah.
Which is both funny and sad sometimes, I think. But I love the, you know, "A tiny little instant that might define or explain the rest of your life." Samantha Fillion says, "Kindergarten teacher sent to insane asylum." Which isn't necessarily a story about her own life at all. It's a story about someone else's life, but it intersected with hers at this one influential moment, and she's still thinking about it however many years later.
Hmm. Or "Left Behind, Friends Lost to Marriage." Or, yeah, on a sadder note, "Miscarriage, Age 15, Mom Doesn't Know."
Yeah, I mean, I think when we started doing these, we thought they would be funny or pithy or jokey or cute. And the amount of emotion that people had been packing into these six-word stories are so amazing. "Family Portrait, Everyone Smiles But Me." Hmm. You know, that's not a conventional narrative, but it gives you such a picture of his childhood.
Describe what typically happens at these events where you and maybe another editor read from a book like It All Changed in an Instant. What do you say, or what exactly do you read? How do those events unfold?
Right, it's been tricky, because originally we were like, okay, we're not going to just stand up there and read straight through this. But they've turned into these really interactive events. They're so much fun. We'll start out by reading maybe the introduction and a few memoirs, but that's really not the bulk of it. The bulk of it is the six-word memoir, Slam. You can't just attend our events, because we're going to hand you a pen and an index card and make you think. And so while we do our little shtick, we'll have you brainstorming your memoirs. And then we also have contributors to the book. You know, the book has over 800 memoirists in it from all over the country. Some are famous writers, and some are teenagers and grandmothers and regular people. So we have a bunch of our contributors coming to the event. Some, I think, from as far as Chicago and Madison. People are driving in. You know, it's their first time being published, and it's very exciting. And so we're going to have people tell their six-word memoirs, and they're going to tell some of the backstory behind it. You know, either what led them to these six words, or what's the joke that we're not getting, or what's more of their life. And these events have been so much fun. We've done them on our last few book tours, and they sort of turn into something in between a support group and stand-up comedy. And then we'll ask everyone in the audience to read their memoir as well, and we will bribe you with fabulous prizes, and it will all be very cathartic and entertaining.
Wow. I'm intrigued by the contrast between this and, for instance, so much of what we have on reality TV, which I'll confess I generally speaking can't stand, because, you know, in a sense, in many of these reality shows, you know, we have this camera hovering over someone's shoulder, recording, you know, every random thought and the minutiae of their day and so on. And this, in a sense, feels like sort of the opposite. I mean, what could be more opposite of that than to simply have six words by which,
right,
you express yourself?
I mean, I think it's some of both. In reality TV, there's a camera over your shoulder, and people say, oh, they edited me wrong, they didn't express me right. And what's nice about this is it's just your own words. I'm not editing them. I'm not changing them. I'm not recontextualizing them. I'm just putting them on a page. So you really get to express the part of yourself that you feel is most essential.
What about the fact that there is all, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
That's okay.
There is always a name attached, as far as I can tell. I don't think there's any six-word memoir in this book that says anonymous.
Correct.
Do you have any notion of how many of these are submitted with the correct name? I mean, versus how many people are making up a name and retaining some sense of privacy, even as they submit their six-word memoirs for potentially the whole world to see?
Right. It's hard to say. I mean, we're not fact-checking. But what we've found is that most people are so proud to have put their story out there. First of all, we've got hundreds of thousands of submissions on the site. And the 800 in the book are the cream of the crop. These people have been selected. They've been published. And so a lot of people are really, really proud of it. When we send everybody their contributor copy, we'll see people's personal blogs light up with pictures of their page. Oh, my God, here's my name in a book. And you can go to your local bookstore, and there it is. And you can send it to your mother. And, you know, depending on what memoir you've chosen, that can be more or less difficult. But I think that there's a real sense of validation in claiming your story and putting your name on it and putting it out for the world to see.
I think one of the things that's quite intriguing is how in many cases, and maybe we've touched on this already, people are sometimes expressing painful things that might otherwise be really hard for them to say. I think, for instance, of one of my favorites in the book, which are these six words written by someone named Anna Marie. Dad got promoted. I miss him. And we're left wondering if Anna Maria is ever able to express that feeling, that longing, that hurt directly to her father, or if this might be the only means by which she expresses that.
Right. It gives her an opportunity to say what she's feeling, perhaps to a different audience than she might feel comfortable doing it. It's also amazing how the six-word memoirs have let me know things about people I know very well that they might not have told me in other circumstances. My own father's six-word memoir that he submitted to me was 60, still haven't forgiven my parents.
Wow.
And it was very intense, and we talked about his childhood some, but, you know, I'm the kid. He doesn't tell me the deep-seated resentments. You know, his parents are dead, which makes it a little easier. But it opened up a part of him to me that I hadn't seen before, and we're very, very close. But it gives families, I think, an opportunity to talk about things they might not otherwise. It gives friends new insight into the way the people that they think they know well are thinking and feeling.
Hmm. Talk for a moment about the well-known names that pepper this book. I mean, by no means are they the majority. Most of what we read here are six-word memoirs by ordinary people we've never heard from before and presumably we'll never hear from again, but there are some famous people in these pages. You've mentioned that the project, I think, sort of began by giving this challenge to already established writers. Do these famous contributors come from that point in the project, or do you still get six-word memoirs from well-known writers and otherwise famous people?
We still get them. We definitely fight for them sometimes. You know, 95% of what's in here was submitted to us, but we'll reach out to people we admire sometimes, especially people known as memoirists, because, you know, that's our genre, and it's so cool to be able to take an ordinary person's memoir and put them next to Frank McCourt, who's a legend, you know, or James Fry, who everyone knows for getting the beatdown from Oprah over the truth of his memoir. He tells us in six words, "So would you believe me anyway?"
Yes.
And we've got Pulitzer Prize winners in here.
I like
Gina
John
Diaz
yeah.
and Tony Kushner.
Right, John Grogan, that dumb dog sure paid off.
Oh, sure, yeah. And then, you know, Neil Patrick Harris and Sarah Silverman. So we've got comedians, we've got athletes, we've got writers, you know, just a little bit of every walk of life. And it's not about the celebrities, but it's very cool to be published next to them. And everyone's got six words. It's an even playing field. When we did the teenager book, the number of, you know, high school sophomores who freaked out because they were published in a book with Taylor Swift, it was like the most validating thing that had ever happened to them. So we like a little bit of celebrity. It's sort of aspirational at the same time as it's populist.
Well, and it probably underscores just how neat an exercise this can be. I mean, not everybody, but I think some people might really feel like, well, if this is something Taylor Swift wants to do, maybe this is something I should do, or whoever might be someone you admire.
When we started the project, we just had a few big-name writers like Dave Eggers and Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love. And in fact, I think her next book is on sale today. But we had their six-word memoirs right up at the top of the page, and we were like, here are what these writers you love did. Now we want yours. We want yours just as much as theirs. We're going to put you right up there next to them. And again, not everyone can write a 400-page book, but everyone can write a six-word memoir. We've all got one, or two, or six.
Do you have any idea what a contributor named J. Tony Smith meant when he submitted this memoir, I Am More Than Six Words? And I wonder if, along with that question, are you ever turned down, or do you ever find people who are sort of offended by the notion of summarizing a human life and all its complexity in six words?
I think people think it's really daunting when they just hear the idea. And then when they hear a lot of examples, they go, oh, yeah, I can do that. You know, we get a lot of memoirs on that idea that six words isn't enough. I can never be encapsulated. This is only the beginning. And a lot of jokey ones, too, where, you know, the sentence will sort of run off in the middle. But I think everyone knows that we know that they're more than six words and that this is a place to start. We've had a few, actually more of the professional writers and the bigger names be like, oh, I just have no idea. Oh, I could just never do this. And then when we show them sort of all the examples, you know, I'm a pretty wordy person. So is Larry. The two of us are these kind of New York editor verbose types and trying to become really good at this really sparse form has been educational for both of us, I think.
What do you think it is about the sparseness that can make it so expressive? And I suppose not in every case. I mean, I'm sure it's possible to write a really boring or rather meaningless six-word memoir. But certainly on the strength of what you show us in this book and much of what I see on your website, that it's possible to be incredibly expressive within the sparseness of this framework.
I think it's distilled. It makes you choose the most powerful words. You know, any writing teacher you've ever had will tell you to take what you've written and then cut all the unnecessary words. Or whenever you find a turn of phrase you're particularly happy with, that's probably the one you want to cut. And most writing teachers will tell you that you want the essential. And so when you've only got six words, you're choosing each one very, very carefully. And you know, the English language has a plethora of synonyms for every idea. And so you can really choose the one that has the exact right nuance, which I just don't think you have you're not as compelled to do when you've got more words to work with. You can waste them, in a sense. And here you know that you need to treat every word with a lot of care.
I wonder if you could explain one matter that might seem kind of mundane to ask about, but as we see these various memoirs on the page, no two look exactly alike. That, for instance, you are using different fonts, different size fonts. Sometimes one six-word memoir will dominate an entire page. I'm wondering if you could just kind of talk about the physical layout of this book, and if you, as one of the editors, had very much to do with exactly how this book appears and exactly how these memoirs are delivered to us on the page.
Sure. I mean, at Harper Perennial, we have really amazing designers, and the book does have an interior designer who did the actual pages. But we talked a lot when we first started doing this book. Well, do we just want one per page? Do we want a picture with every single one? Like, you obviously don't want a book that's just going to be solid text of like 30 on a page and 10 point Times New Roman, you know? And I think that varying the fonts really helped. I mean, we're trying to get across the idea in a hunk of paper that this is not one voice. This is hundreds of voices. Each page has up to five voices. And so font, I think, is sort of the voice of print. to something small and italicized, like I'm in love with my cousin, is almost whispered and secret, you know? And then you get something that's big and bold, like Texas cheerleader writes recipe for a revolution. Mm-hmm. So there's the idea that each one is a different voice. There's the slight differences in the voice. And then, you know, there's just variations. Some of the big ones are famous people or just ones that we loved. There are a few that have images. There are about 10 or 20 photographs, cartoons. We've got some really impressive cartoonists in here, actually. And each cartoon, just like each memoir, comes directly from the person who wrote the six words. We're not illustrating other people. So J. Tony Smith, who did I Am More Than Six Words, made a painting, and he scanned it, and he submitted it to us, and that's where we got it. So it's just another way of having the book be self-expression, of having the book be so many different voices, big stories and small stories and quiet stories and sad stories and loud stories. And I think very few people actually read the book straight through. It's really something you can dip into and peek at. You pass it around the dinner table at a party, or you leave it on the coffee table, and you can always just take a few, like a box of chocolates, you know?
Absolutely. We passed this book around as my family celebrated Christmas on New Year's Day. And that's exactly what we did. And now that I think about it, as I kind of replay it in my mind, it was like passing around a box of chocolates, and we enjoyed it very much. Just a quick final word about something that sets this book apart from its predecessors, the very end of the book and what we find there. Say a word about that, please.
Sure. We added an appendix for the first time here, and it's been hugely debated. All the books have indexes, which is fun, because if you want just memoirs about chocolate or hair or work or family or cheesecake, you can find that. But this book also has selected bios, backstories, correspondence, and conversations. And we go back and forth a lot. The six words say it all, or do you sometimes need a backstory, or do you want to know more? So it's not for everyone. It's just for a few. It's kind of quirky. But it'll let you know who some people are who are either a little more famous or have more of a story to what happened. Some of the memoirs, if you look at them and you go, who is that guy? It might be in the back of the book. And if you're a super purist who only wants six words per person, you don't have to read it. And if you're a super curious person, it just gives you a little more of an archive to dig into.
Hmm. Very good. Well, there is so much to enjoy in this book. And, of course, I trust that as we've talked about this, we are prompting some of our listeners to sit down with a piece of paper. It's actually, you don't even really need a piece of paper, do you?
No, you can go to smithmag.net and you can submit your six-word memoirs there and be instantly published online.
Amazing. And in the meantime, this book, It All Changed in an Instant, More Six-Word Memoirs by Writers Famous and Obscure from Smith Magazine, is a paperback from Harper Perennial. Rachel Fershleiser, one of its editors. Rachel Fershleiser, I have really enjoyed this so much, and I thank you for joining me today on The Morning Show.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, pays his monthly visit to the program. And on Friday, I look forward to speaking with someone originally from Racine, by the name of Carol Gianforte. She has written a really beautiful memoir about growing up on Carlisle Avenue in the heart of Racine, a memoir which looks back at the life that she lived with her father and her mother. And we'll be talking with her on Friday's morning show. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. You can find the program archived on our website, wgtd.org. Click on Talk. Support for The Morning Show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. WGTD is also supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu.
Mostly sunny skies this morning and this afternoon, as a matter of fact. A high today of 76 degrees inland. Mid to upper 60s will be the high near Lake Michigan. Partly cloudy overnight with a low of 55 degrees. Partly sunny tomorrow. Just a 20% chance of rain. A high of 78 degrees. Again, a little cooler near the lake. On Friday, a 50% chance of rain, and we're actually going to have a high on Friday and Saturday of just 69. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha.